people of the internet. How's it going today? How you doing? I'm Billy Bones, and this is A Walk Through the Mind, where we can sit down, hang out, chit-chat, discuss a handful of ideas that have been bouncing around inside my head, see if we can't go out there and get the conversation started, get the gears turning within our head, see if we can talk to friends, family, person we meet on the street, and just get those 2 cents chipped in. So there's been a lot of talk of the fires out west lately. The air quality out here in Western Washington has been subpar. I even nominated the other week to not go outside and do outside chores that needed to be done because I couldn't see across the valley. The smoke was so thick, it almost looked like fog had rolled in. And I normally don't worry about stuff like that. I mean, such is life. But it was bad enough to say, no, I don't want to be out there. And granted, there's talks of arson or poor fire suppression methods being within people who go out camping, leaving fires unattended, or maybe even just high winds and power lines getting knocked over, sparking these fires, something akin to what happened in California a couple years with the PG&E situation. But these fires, they spark up and they fly across the land. It becomes just a scary feature. And it's not something that I see here in Western Washington, but yes, we all see it on the news and on the social medias here in Western Washington, where we get the nickname the Evergreen State. Got lots of greenery. It's because the ocean and the sun gets all the water vapor evaporated, gets into the air, creates clouds, comes eastward over the land, and as it hits the mountains, the Cascade Mountains, dumps all the rain out, and then on the eastern side of the state, east of the Cascades, it's practically a desert. It's almost just flipping a coin or a light switch. It's kind of crazy to see how you go from green to brown in summertime. And as you're driving through, you can easily see that one bad flick of a cigarette butt or one stray spark from a campfire could definitely cause a problem. It's rather stark when you're able to see it and visualize that and just wonder, how vast is this dryness? But there's been a lot of talk of climate change. Lord Jay Inslee, the governor here, blames climate change for the majority of the problems here. Heard a news clip of Gavin Newsom blaming climate change and poor forest management, but climate change, climate change, climate change. And now I'm not, as I've discussed in the past, opposed to the climate change debate, but I feel that the overall impact of specific man-made climate change is less of the reason for the majority of our problems. I do feel that land management is an active thing and thing that we need to pay attention to. There's signs here in local towns that talk about making sure your stacks of wood for your winter fireplace are placed far enough away in case something tragic happens. Dry brush and leaves and the sort like that definitely add to the problem of such things. But when we start asking questions on why forest management isn't a thing, we come up with a whole myriad of answers. Well, it's too expensive, or it's hard work, or if we go through and start up with the logging, we're going to displace the spotted owl and any other array of animals, which we can come to the argument of, well, wildfires tend to displace animals, injure and kill animals, be they on accident or on purpose, or just through, again, this lack of management. Where I live, back in the ancient times, before I was alive, we had trees here that rivaled the Great Redwood Forest of California. You can drive around through some of the towns out here and you can see remnants of the giant trees. There's a town nearby that has a tree or a section of a tree that's on display that's like 25 feet. It's not diameter. Yes, diameter. 25 feet in diameter across not the circumference, not around, but left to right, huge, massive, giant trees. In some of the arguments with the land management, again, protecting the owl and whatnot, there's people that have gone back and done the research to say that it's the conservationists who are out there blocking all the problems or blocking all the ability to log and take care of the land. But on the flip side, there's also talk of automation and the reduction of jobs creating the problem for being able to employ people to do such things. Again, as you come through this town, these neighbors, or these local towns, you look at some of these old pictures. There's a lot of pictures of way back in the day. All the cities around here have a spot that has some pictures of what the area used to look like. Old western looking roads with the dirt roads and the buggies, horse-drawn buggies kind of thing. Back when they were sawing down those 25-foot trees, they were using two men with those super long saws. You've seen those in the cartoons, I'm sure. One pulls, then the other pulls back and forth, slowly chipping away at the tree to fell it. And then you had your collection of people going through to cut off all the branches. And it became a very labor-intensive process, very dangerous process. But as a means to process all this wood, all this old-growth wood to be able to create and build things. And so you had companies out here like Weyerhaeuser, clear a path, a swath. And then they'd come back through and plant new trees, properly spaced, so that way there was enough room to grow and expand. And then they would plan to come back in 30, 40, maybe even 50 years and clear out that new growth of trees that they had planted, let it cycle through for a year or two, and then go back through and plant new trees. Renewable resource, something we can come back to for trees and or for things like paper and furniture. But as we get closer and closer to this 21st century, when we look back at logging, we've got those giant caterpillar-type vehicles with the arms on them where they pick them up and then just slice and dice, clear the bark, clear the excess branches, automatically pick up and hold the tree while they cut it off of the stump. And so there we have a massive reduction in the amount of jobs that are able to be done within the logging industry to still maintain it as being profitable. And there's studies done. There's always studies done. And this is, again, where part of the problem with land management comes into play. Forest management, making sure that we can clear the brush and make sure that things are safe, reduce the amount of fire. When firefighters are doing active firefighting of these wildfires, they do things called backburns. But there's also the excuse that, or the reason, the belief that people should be doing current burns. Go through, burn out just a section of the area, keep it controlled, base it on the weather and whatnot. But you run into problems, again, with the people out there to save the animals, to protect the forest, to make sure that things don't go wrong. And so you have to file paperwork, 1 to 5,000 pages worth of paperwork, explaining your sustainability, explaining the reasons why you're allowed to do that. And somehow you have to go along and fight against the people that say that burning these forests down, burning this excess fuel down, is going to add to the CO2 emissions. It's going to add to climate change. And while there is an aspect to that, at what point where do you draw the line? How do you balance out the protection of overall forests in an uncontrolled burn, such as we've seen these past couple weeks on the West Coast, to a controlled burn to reduce the fuel sources and actively help the ecosystem? There's a lot of interconnected plays with Mother Nature. Forest fires are not an unnatural thing between lightning strikes and other things that may happen even before man is entered into the equation. I read an article that the spotted owl actually does rather well in burned out areas. Pine trees drop pine cones in a light burn, not a heavy burn like we've seen on some of these. Drop their pine cones and those open up and release the seeds. Other critters come in, and it's a recreation of the forest floor to improve the way of life or expand. There's always a beginning and an end with life. It's a natural cause, natural things. We also have the argument that there's not enough funds to create these controlled burns, this forest management. Now, is that because we have too many extra side projects? Is that because we have not enough taxes? Or is that poor money management? Or again, does it go to that we have too many studies? I'm not saying that we shouldn't have studies to prove and protect, but at what point does litigation again get in the way when we're filling out these documents to prove that this is the correct way? Now you have lawyers' fees and you actually have time management, and all of a sudden it's no longer worth it, or it's been in litigation for too long, and then nature happens. These fires kick up. President Trump was made fun of a couple years ago in 2018 for the California wildfires, saying he was ignoring climate change. But he was talking about forest management again, that we need to activate this ability to be stewards of the earth. I'm not saying we go all Fern Gully and chop it all down. When you look at some of the hillsides out here and you see that the logging companies have gone through and they've cleaned a swath off of a hillside, mountainside, it doesn't look pretty. But again, it's that renewable resource. It's that chance to take it, resupply it, and it gets to be done. Also within active land management, you've got these giant trees and then they drop new seedlings, new little trees start popping up, and it becomes a cost prohibitive thing on clearing out the trees. Because the bigger the tree is, the more round it is, the more 2x4s, 4x4s, 2x6s, and all the such are available. But you get these more or less saplings, or a little bit bigger than saplings, year 5 and 10 trees, that aren't big enough to produce more than one or two 2x4s full of knots. But there's companies that are actively looking at the ability to take those tinier trees and turn them into something like particle board. Bring in that IKEA marketing capability. And while I'm not a fan of particle board, if we need to find an active use, we need to find a way to process and create these things, then that needs to happen. Problems require solutions. And here in a capitalist society, that's what we tend to do best. Not always the greatest, but we're pretty good about figuring out things here. But another problem here with the land management, the forest management going through the logging, becomes an issue because we don't have the ability to process wood here as much as we used to. It goes along with the outsourcing. Another article that I read mentioned that we send a significant load of trees to Japan to be processed. Just like we don't have steel mills as much as we did back in the day. We don't have wood mills. We don't have other processing things. Now, is that again part of the land management, the protection of forests, so that way we don't go buck wild and just eliminate all the trees? Or is that a business problem? Are there too many taxes and fees to get the process started? Too much OSHA regulations? I don't know. There's a lady out here running for the Commissioner of Public Lands who grew up here in southwestern Washington. And while she's not the most eloquent in speaking, she's not the fastest speaking, she does have her little two cents on land management that needs, I feel, should be addressed.
In the old days, logging was our major industry here, and the timber companies, landowners, they would harvest and replant. When they replanted trees in our forest, they would space them apart in such a way that those trees would grow up and be the right spacing for the harvest, which was usually around 30, 40 years. And the reason they would harvest at 30, 40 years is because the growth rate would start slowing down in these species. So they would clear cut, you'd get some open spaces, the trees would be spaced properly for the size they were expected to get. But now we've let those trees get bigger and bigger and closer together. We haven't harvested them. So what we have is forests that were planned for harvest that were never harvested. we have way too many trees too mm-hmm. close together. Diseases are spreading. They're susceptible to fire. And when they burn so hot with all that fuel. But the other thing they're doing, and this is an example of climate effects that maybe are not being watched. If we have, I would say some of our forests probably have two times the biomass in the trees than what we have had historically. Those trees are sucking up the water out of the groundwater. So less water is going to our stream flows, which we are worried about for our fish populations. And low stream flows mean higher temperatures in our streams, which is also bad for fish. Yeah.
So two things there, talking about the disease. That's mentioned in a handful of articles that I've read about the density, how the trees aren't social distanced far enough. And so little things like the parasites were able to hop, skip, and jump rather quickly through the forest, killing all the trees, reducing their ability to grow healthily. And so those dead trees then fall over more frequently or at a earlier time pace than a healthy forest would be. But she also brings up the use of the water resource. And not only does that affect the streams, which I'm sure has some effect on the cooling aspect of life, but it increases the river temperature. And we are a very big salmon culture out here. Respectfully and carefully help the spawning of salmon out here. But if the rivers get too warm, then the fish aren't able to survive. And, well, more or less the fry, the baby fish, are not able to survive. The eggs, water levels get lower and lower. But also within the forest itself, trees, the bigger trees, have more real estate within the ground, able to collect more and more water. And so other trees get less and less water. And as you space it across, and if you want to throw in climate change and the reduced rainfall, trees get just a little bit drier, not as damp or juicy as they otherwise would be. And again, you get one tree that's surrounded by a couple other trees that are taking just enough water. A tree doesn't make it very far in its lifespan. And again, when these fires come through, the fuel is there and they ignite. They explode, as someone once said. And it's a balancing act, again, between protecting the animals, protecting the habitat, not polluting, not going buck wild and sawing down everything that looks like it's a green tree that's worth cutting down. But we also need to protect our habitat. We as humans are moving further and further out into nature because the cities are so dense, and so we need to spread out a little bit more. And now with the chaos that's going on within the cities, people are vacating the cities and moving further and further out with remote access to their jobs. They don't need to drive in. How many people can afford to live up in the mountains? How many people are not picking up the brush, the leaves, and the dead branches that fall down? It's not that it needs to be squeaky clean, but you can't have stacks of brush, dry brush, sitting around. We all need to take a part in preserving things, doing our part to make sure that our neighbors are safe, our woodland creature friends are safe. We need to find a way to process the trees. I would very much appreciate seeing American businesses fire back up. We don't have to be a fully self-sustaining nation, but we all want jobs. There's plenty of people out there that don't have a college degree or don't need a college degree that could actually go out and do a blue-collar job. It may be hard work, but blue-collar jobs don't usually come with student loan debt to get that job. Or at the very least, you can go forward and pay that student loan debt. Hard work usually gets good pay. Blue-collar jobs like that are not usually minimum wage. And you can actually advance through. You could get a career, go into management, run your own business, and make the big bucks, go to bat with those Jeff Bezos of the world, or at least the people that are within the same realm or sphere. Get that ball rolling for the general rate, for the generational wealth for your next of kin. So hopefully there was something there to think about. Hopefully there was a conversation starter. Hopefully it got your gears turning within your head, let you think about something. And if you think about something and you want to let me know, you just reach out and say, "Hey, Billy, I got something to say." Because I'm Billy Bones, B-I-L-L-Y-B-O-N, the number 3-S. You find me on Twitter, at Billy Bones. Or you can go to the website, billybones.com. That's the number 3 instead of an E. You can go there, find email links, past episode links, or a means to support the show, like our executive producer today, Tony. Thank you for donating, chipping in. $50, I do appreciate that. That's humbling. And I hope I do well. I hope I continue to make it worth your time and anyone else's time who's here sharing, listening, appreciating on some level, or arguing back, finding disagreements with the things I say. That's okay. We're here to have that conversation. We're here to get the conversation started and rolling and see where we all stand and see if we can come to some sort of agreement on how to better advance our society, our way of life, the human cause. Because all it takes is love, a little bit of group cooperation, seceding here, advancing there, and finding that common ground that I know we all have. We're not all extremists one way or another. There's a delicate balancing act that we're able to engage in. But I love you guys. Keep up the good work. And I'll talk to you next week.